The coronavirus and our mortality is our topic during this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. Our guest is Dr. Richard Land, who is the president of Southern Evangelical Seminary, and their website is ses.edu. Recently, he wrote an article in the Christian Post, which we'll link to, about the coronavirus and, again, our mortality. Dr. Land, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Well, I'm happy to be with you.
Okay, so put the coronavirus in perspective. It seems maybe some people are over-exaggerating it, and then maybe other people are underestimating it.
Well, you know, I came across a list the other day of the leading causes of death worldwide between January 1st and March 30th. And the coronavirus was the bottom of the list. It was 10th on the list of 10 with 35,000. Now, of course, it's over 100,000 now, but that would still make it probably no more than third from the bottom. The worst was abortion at 10 million babies killed worldwide in those 3 months. But there were lots of other things like childbirth death, just things that we've learned to live with. We've learned to live with cancer. We've learned to live with alcohol-related deaths, traffic deaths, et cetera. So what is it about the coronavirus that has so upended our society? And I said, you know, first of all, probably the suddenness of it and the fact that there are things you can do to protect yourself against most of the, at least partially, against most of the leading causes of death worldwide, such as heart disease, such as cancer. You can get cancer screenings. You can not expose yourself to things that are going to be more likely to cause cancer. You can get your flu shot, et cetera. But the only thing we can do with the coronavirus at present is stay away from everybody. It's remarkably contagious, and that's the thing that I think has really unsettled people. And the fact that it has caused a complete unsettlement of our economy, and you know, but I think what it has done is it has shaken people out of the complacency that we have in America. We have created an artificial life that's very unique in the history of mankind in terms of insulating ourselves from death as a common occurrence. We are not at the beck and call of plagues and pandemics as people have been in the past. And this shows us just how fragile that veneer of this unnatural veneer of safety and security is, and that our safety and our security really can't be in the quote American way of life, and that I think it is an opportunity for people of faith to follow Paul's admonition when he said that we are to be redeeming the time because the days are evil. The word time there is kairos, for time in its most propitious moments, not chronologically, but sometimes are more propitious than others. And I think that we have fellow countrymen who are more ready to listen to a witness and testimony about eternal things and about eternal security and about where true security lies than maybe before the coronavirus hit.
So, in effect, this coronavirus is a kairos moment for America.
I believe it is. And, for instance, we've been forced into going to church online, but I've talked to several pastors who say that more people are attending the virtual services than were attending the regular services.
Really?
And many of them are people that have been out of church or have not ever been churched, and they're listening, and they're watching.
Oh.
And so we're having more opportunity to witness and to people who are more ready to listen because they've been shaken out of their false complacency.
Yeah, excellent. By the way, you know, when you were talking about how we have insulated ourselves in modern life from the threat of death, I'm thinking about the fact, in contrast to that, 300, 400 years ago, the Puritans, as they would teach little children, for example, in the New England Primer, as they taught them the alphabet, they taught them the gospel and biblical truths. The word for X was, the message for X was, Xerxes did die, and so must I. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, letting children know, even children, you know, yeah, one day you're going to die, and
well,
we need to live that fact.
That's another example of the false and really unnatural veneer of complacency and security we've put on ourselves. I heard someone say the other day that a friend of ours, their child had died, and, you know, it just seems so unnatural. You don't ever expect to bury a child. Well, I guarantee you, our 17th, 18th, and 19th century forebears expected to bury children.
Yeah.
Because if you go to their graveyards, they bury children all the time.
Yeah, that's exactly
who
right.
Who died from diseases that we have inoculated ourselves against now.
Yeah, thank God for that, those inoculations.
Amen. Praise God.
Yeah, but even euphemisms today, you know, instead of saying he died, you know, it's, he passed, you know. He passed? What do you mean he passed? You know, it's just a,
yep.
You're right. We inoculate ourselves from it. Now, one thing that I would like to mention about the coronavirus is that it does seem that the weak and the most vulnerable, those who are in bad health, do the worst off. I heard a fascinating statistic, and give credit to this to Tucker Carlson, but he said something like this: 6,500 New Yorkers died in a specific time because of the coronavirus or coronavirus-related deaths. He said only 128 thereabouts did not have known pre-existing conditions. So in other words, the vast majority of the victims died because their lungs were already compromised, and then it hit them, or diabetes, or, you know, whatever, obesity, you know, I don't know, just pre-existing factors played a role.
Yeah, there's no question about that. We do have populations that are more vulnerable. The older you are, of course, the older you are, the more likely you are to have another condition. We have people living longer than ever before, and doing so because we have our wonderful medical system is able to treat a lot of these conditions. People live a lot longer with diabetes than they used to.
Right.
People live a lot longer with heart disease than they used to. People live a lot longer with asthma and with COPD than they used to. But they do weaken your immune system. They do weaken your lung capacity. And the coronavirus evidently goes after the most vulnerable. And that's why, for instance, the death rate in New Orleans is higher than it is in other cities, because New Orleans has a population that is skewed toward having more of these conditions because of their lifestyle. The obesity rate in New Orleans, for instance, is higher than most other places in the country because the food's so good.
Yeah, those Café du Monde beignets are fantastic. Okay, now wait. What about the African-American population? I understand that they're more vulnerable than whites. Would that be related to their diet in part?
Well, it would be related to their not having the same access to health care as a population. They tend to be poorer. Even though Mr. Trump has made inroads into that with, before the coronavirus hit, with very, very low unemployment rates among African-Americans, African-Americans as a group are more in poverty and more in the lower echelons of the economy than the rest of the population, which is in many ways a vestige of the racist past.
Right.
And as a result, they do not get the same health care.
Right.
Or have access to the same health care. And that leads them into having health conditions that are not as treated, not as diagnosed. I mean, I was amazed to hear that when they were taking people into the hospital in New York, about one-fifth of the people had diabetes and didn't know it.
Oh my goodness, that is amazing, and you know,
so that means they're not getting regular checkups
and,
because they don't have the same insurance, they don't have the same health care, that the rest of the population does.
And I know people like Bernie.
And it's true of the Hispanic population too, to a lesser extent. The statistics show pretty clearly that on average, Caucasians have the most access to health care and have the best health. And then Asians are second, and Hispanics are third, and African Americans are fourth. And that corresponds with economics. Asians tend to have a higher per capita income than Caucasians, than Hispanics, than African Americans.
Huh, interesting. Now, you mentioned in the article that people are praying more and also that Bible sales are up. Well, certainly the second one can be objectively measured, but this is fantastic. Then there must be reports of people reporting that they're praying more. Fantastic. Tell us about this.
Their pastors are finding this to be true. They're also calling suicide lines more. Calls to suicide lines have gone up by a factor of about six. And that has to do as much with lost jobs. We know, as a matter of research, that when people lose their jobs, they're much more likely to commit suicide, they're much more likely to have a heart attack, they're much more likely to be depressed, and they're much more likely to turn to drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, that makes sense. Meanwhile, as far as the healthcare system, you were just talking a moment ago about the, you know, blacks and Hispanics not as getting as access as much to the positive health care. I saw a headline where it said that in Canada, with their nationalized health care system, it's overtaxed because of the COVID-19.
Well, it's overtaxed anyway.
And this makes it worse.
The Canadian system works fine until somebody gets really sick.
Yeah.
Then they come to America where they can get treatment. They don't get put on a waiting list. Listen, I was under socialized medicine for 3 years in England. I lived in England when I was doing my PhD at Oxford. And whatever the problem is, government-run medicine is not the answer.
Yeah.
And that's true everywhere it's been tried. Our system needs fixes, but government-running is not the answer.
All right, now I've seen some articles going back to this spiritual awakening, where a lot of Americans think that maybe God is trying to get our attention through the coronavirus crisis. Are your thoughts along the same lines?
Well, I would never say that, because Romans 11 tells us that no one could understand the mind of God. It's beyond us, and I don't want to attribute to God anything that God may not have had anything to do with. I don't think God sent the coronavirus, but I do think that Romans 8:28 tells us that all things are being worked together for the good of those that love God and are the called according to his purpose. So what Satan intended for evil, God may be using for good. Just like God never intended for Joseph's brothers to sell him into slavery. But Joseph told them in Genesis 50:20 that what you intended for evil, God used for God, redeemed it for good. And so I think that what the devil may have intended for evil, God can redeem it and use it for good.
Hmm. All right, we have half a minute left. Anything else you want to say? I mean, this, as we said, this could be America's Kairos moment, and it could be the time for a great awakening. Or it could be that people get so hardened, and it becomes a time of falling away.
We need to pray that God will use our churches and our Christians to redeem this moment. Ephesians, that Kairos moment, to redeem it means to pounce upon it and cash it in for profit. Cash it in for spiritual profit.
Spiritual profit. Excellent. Dr. Richard Land, ses.edu, that's Southern Evangelical Seminary. Thank you, sir. Stay safe. God bless.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.